Thanks for being here. We are in Genesis chapter 30. The issue that's going to happen tonight is Jacob, who's gone up to Padan Aram. He's got the four wives. They're having children. Rachel hasn't had a child, and right at the end of last week, you go back to chapter 30, verse 23, 24, Rachel has a son named Joseph, and that's a turning point, because now Rachel, she's married to Jacob, but in this culture, the wives were supposed to produce children. And if she doesn't produce a child, she could be returned as, in a sense, faulty, go back to her people. And so she's not a full wife until Joseph is born. And so it appears, the question here, Jacob had to work 7 years for one wife, 7 years for the next wife, you know, Rachel and Leah, but he got Leah first, had to work seven more years to get Rachel the second time. So that's 14 years. So we're sometime in the 14-year mark. Either we're right at the 14-year mark or we're past the 14-year mark, because he served his time and he's paying a bride price. Remember, this is important in this story tonight. Jacob comes up to Padan Aram, and there's a map on, and you know where it's all at, on the second of the back page. It's got his return now. It's the same map you saw last week. I just changed the direction of the arrows and stuff. But he came up with nothing. He comes up with absolutely nothing. Laban, you know, Rachel's and Leah's father and Jacob's mother's brother, Rebekah's brother, he's excited to see Jacob, because last time he saw someone from this family, they had camels, they had treasures, they're wealthy, the wealthy servant of Abraham. Jacob, on the other hand, has nothing. He can't pay for a bride. So he has to agree to work for 7 years for Rachel, and he does, as you know, and then he ends up with Leah. So he works seven more years to get Rachel, because Laban changes the deal on him. So his investment, his price that he paid was time. He paid 14 years of time for these two brides. So they are paid for. They're his wives. And one of the reasons why Jacob will not go back, or hesitates to go back potentially, is he doesn't need to or doesn't want to, or it's risky for Rachel to go back out of her family's area without having a son, because she's really not a full wife. I mean, it's different in that culture, you understand. But once she produces Joseph, she's in. She's secure her place as a wife. So it took 14 years. And so now Jacob is going to be ready to go home. He's going to go home. He maybe was going to stay a few days, but he ended up having to stay 14 years to pay, 7 years to pay for Rachel. He didn't get her, seven more years to pay for Rachel again. And now he's paid the price. So sometime after that, Joseph is born. We could figure it out. But he's at this point now that he's ready to go home with his wives and his 11 children, or 11 sons and one daughter. So that's where our story begins tonight. So I'm going to begin in chapter 30, reading. I'll read right off the notes here, because I've got it in the English Standard here on the notes. And he's ready to go back to the land. Here it is. Chapter 30 of Genesis, verse 25. As soon as Rachel had borne Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away, that I may go to my own home and country." So that is the theme of this whole idea, is he's ready to go. Now notice right here, it doesn't say after 14 years. It says as soon as Rachel had borne Joseph. So his willingness to go home is because of this right here. Rachel is secured as a wife, so now I can take her away from her family. So we assume he's worked the years, so we've got at least 14 years, and then sometime later, if it's a couple months, if it's a year, Joseph is born, and now he's ready to go home. I think it's right almost exactly the same time if you time it out. Okay, I'm ready to go home. "Send me away," he says, "Laban, that I may go to my home country, my own country, my own home and country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, that I may go, for you know the service that I have given you." And that indeed has taken place. Jacob has been working. This whole time, he has been producing. He's been watching the sheep. He's been raising the goats. He's been out working, doing the job, and there's been production. There's been production during this time, and Laban's going to admit it. So there's Jacob has served his time. He hasn't skipped work. He hasn't lied. He hasn't stolen. He served his time. He's got his wives. I'm ready to go home. I wasn't planning on staying here for 14 years. I just came to get a wife so I don't have to marry someone from the Canaanites. But Laban, verse 27, but Laban said to him, now again, this is, Laban is deceitful. Jacob is deceitful. Laban is deceitful. And so anything Laban says, you've got to, I think in the context, you should like, what does he really mean? What is he trying to do? He's not telling you what his goals are. But Laban said to him, if I have found favor in your sight, well, you've been changing and lying to me for 14 years. If I found favor in your sight, I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you. So somehow through divination, and I've got some things written down there, point three, learn by divination, and that's one, assuming Laban's being honest, that he actually did practice divination. Divination would come in two categories. He's going to get supernatural information. Two categories. It's going to be inspired divination, inspired information, meaning information from the spiritual realm. So we're not necessarily thinking the Lord God is giving him this information. He could be in control of it. He's manipulating or contacting the spiritual realm somehow, the gods. Inspired divination would be communication from the divine by way of a prophet, a prophecy, or a dream. That would be inspired, like you ask God and a prophet speaks. Deductive would be you wouldn't hear it as a prophet or a prophecy. Deductive would be communication from the divine by way of an event. Some event takes place and you just like feel like, well, this is a sign from God, whatever it is, I should do this, or now I know this. Some phenomena such as there's active and passive phenomena. An active phenomena would be casting lots. You're going to like roll dice. It's not inspired communication from God, but it's deductive. You're going to ask for something and conclude that this is what God wants, but you're going to actively do, you're not just going to, well, the other would be passive. You're just going to watch the stars. Maybe it's an eclipse. Ah, now God has spoken to me through an eclipse. Passive. Active would be casting lots. That could be throwing dice, or it could be throwing sticks and how the sticks land. You then interpret what they're pointing at and how they've overlaid it. There's a whole science behind it, or superstition. Active would also be reading animals' intestines, where you'd bring an animal, you would sacrifice the animal, and then you'd cut it open and read the liver. It talks about, Jeremiah refers to this as Nebuchadnezzar approaches Jerusalem. He wasn't sure which way to go, so he called the diviners, and they sacrifice an animal, and they read the liver. And the divine tells you this is the way to go. And I tried to find a picture. I've got it in my files. I took a picture of it. I couldn't find it tonight. And you can find it online. I just want to use my own picture. But in the British Museum and other places, there's like clay models of livers or animal intestines. And it's instructional. It's how to teach a diviner how to read the liver. So you go to school, get your doctorate's degree, your master's degree in divination and how to read a liver. And then you'd have a sacrifice. They'd cut the organ out and bring it to the priest, and they would then, here's the answer. And most of the time it'd be a yes, no question. You'd say, should I go left or should I go right? Or, should I go left? And they'd answer yes or no, and they'd read the liver. Anyway, that's a deductive would be the events, the phenomena, active phenomena, casting lots or reading the intestine. The passive phenomena on the deductive would be an eclipse, star movement, or some celestial observation. So nonetheless, Laban has said, first, Jacob wants to go home. Laban says, if I have found favor in your sight, I'm entreating you right. If you like being here, I want you to stay because I have learned by divination that the Lord, and there's the word Lord, has blessed me because of you. Because your presence is here, I have been making money for 14 years. I've been making money off your time. Now, Jacob's been provided for. He's got to have, you know, eat food and have a place to stay. But who's been prospering in this time? It's been Laban. And Laban says, it's because the Lord is with you. He favors you. And so because you're here, we're favored. I would like you to stay. And so he says, verse 28, name your wages and I will give it. It's an open contract. I need you to stay. You're the franchise. You're the franchise. You're the Caitlin Clark of the WNBA. I need you to stay here and work. And then he says, notice what he says, name your wages. Now, this is new. Jacob has not been working for wages. What has Jacob been working for? Wives. That's how you spell it wrong. But now he's worked his 14 years. He's got his wife. He's got his family. He's had provisions. But now he's going to be working for wages. And his wages, he's going to get something from Laban. And here, if you go, and Laban says, name your wages and I will give it. The next page right here, go to chapter 30, verse 29 through 33. Some things from, remember we talked last week about the Nuzi tablets, you know, all the cuneiform writings from this time period. It's marked on the map there that I just showed you. And so we've got some insight. We don't have a lot of details, but we've got enough. Shepherds' wages in the ancient Near East, that A-N-E means ancient Near East, that's where we're talking about, were normally a percentage of the herd's byproducts, such as milk, wool, or the young that are born. So name your wages. Laban is thinking, this is what I'm talking about. How much milk and wool? Now, you could get this, but then you could turn around and sell it. You know, you could market it yourself, or you could get a percentage of the young that were born. So this is probably what Laban is thinking. He's not going to pay him in, you know, shekels or things like this necessarily. He's going to pay him in, the percentage on the one, there's a percentage on one of the ancient Nuzi tablets that says if you're going to say, I'll work for the young, that is, you would get 20% of the young. So every fifth lamb that was born would become yours. So after you've worked for a few years, you'd have your own herd. 20% of every goat that was born. We're talking about sheep and goats here. And so 20% would be acceptable. So he says, name your wages. He's thinking about percentage of the byproduct, maybe the percentage of the young. 20%, we only got one example, and that's on a Nuzi tablet, 20%. So here it is. Jacob said to him, now Jacob's going to set him up. Laban says, if I found favor, the Lord has prospered me because of you, name your wages, whatever you want. It's an open contract. I need you to say you're the franchise. So Jacob says to him, you yourself know how I have served you. Get in. I have done my time. I have served. I have worked. I owe you nothing. Meaning he's ending the previous contract. And how you, okay, I'm done. I've worked my 14 years. I've got my wives. This contract is over. We're negotiating something brand new. And how your livestock has fared with me. You even said it. You're prospered because of me, and I'm confirming it. I have taken care of your livestock, and you have more. In fact, he's going to say it. For you, watch what he says. Now, if this is true, or if this is an overstatement, watch Jacob. And how your livestock has fared with me. For you had little before I came. I came, you had virtually nothing. You had some scrawny sheep. You had a couple daughters. I mean, you were in a hurt of problems when I came. Now, if that's the case, I mean, is that him just overplaying the, you know, negotiating? Because we don't get the impression that Laban was not well off. But maybe we don't see it. Maybe this is, you know, more true than an overstatement. But there it is. For you had little before I came, and it has increased abundantly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I turn. So you went from zero to a lot because I'm here and the Lord has blessed you wherever I'm at. The Lord has blessed you. Now, is that true? Well, that's exactly what Laban said. Jacob just elaborated on it. My contract is done. I agree. You had virtually nothing when I got here. And look at what we've created. And that's because the Lord is with me. Not the Lord is with you. The Lord is with me. And so you're prospering. So that's he's building the case. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also? I've been here for 14 years. For 14 years, I've been working. No wages. Everything I've done, I've been working, has produced you tremendously. The Lord has blessed me, which causes you to be blessed. So you've got this, but look around. I've got no, I don't have an estate. I have nothing. It's like, how do you say it? Hand to mouth. You work, pay your bills, and go back to work. I've been working, paying, you know, getting my food, going back to work. So he says, but now, when shall I provide for my own household? Also, I need to start building my own estate. He said, what shall I give you? So, okay, well, what do you want? Again, make a contract. Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. No wages. No, I'm not going to settle for 20% of the young or some percent of the wool or the milk. I don't want anything. We're going to have just an investment. And this, in a sense, is brilliant. You shall not give me anything. If you will do this for me, I will again pasture your flock. I'll go back to work, otherwise I'm out of here. If you'll do this for me, I will again pasture your flock and keep it, take care of it. Let me pass through all your flock today, removing from it every speckled and spotted sheep and every black lamb and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and they shall be my wages. In other words, what we're going to do is we're going to take the flock, your flock, and it's been growing, any flock there that has, there's the sheep are the Awassi fat-tailed sheep. You got a picture there, you can look it up. They're white. Laban's name means white. The word Laban means white. And his sheep are white. The goats are black. So you've got white sheep, you've got black goats. And if they're a white sheep, they're yours. And that's the natural color, that's normal color, predominantly, they're all white. Anything other than white is unusual. The goats are black. They're not striped, they're just black. So let me go through all, right now, just go through your flock. And if I see one of the Awassi fat-tailed sheep, it's supposed to be white, and I see spots on it, I'll take that one. And if I see a black goat, it's got like white stripes on it, I'll take that, and that will be my wages. You don't have to pay me anything. If I go through there and I see nothing, I work, that's it. But if I see something, I'll just make my own herd. I'm going to start building my own herd. Now, I might get, 100 sheep one day. I may get zero sheep. Now, I've got some information down there, point three. Jacob does not ask for a percent by the animals born, but for the animals born with marks. So he doesn't ask for 20%. He asks for, what did we just see? The colored, the stripes, the dotted. We'll read the rest of it. The Awassi sheep, fat-tailed, was most common. The deviation in the white sheep was uncommon. The deviation that does occur, and I got this out of information, out of research, 20%. Deviation is 20% or less. So he's already agreeing to something. If it happens, it's less than 25%. So now it's less than not 20% is what the shepherds worked for. The goats were typically black. Okay, Jacob's marked animals were rare, and the percent requested in the contract Jacob offered was well below the going rate for the shepherd. Now, I got that next point. See Genesis 31, 10 through 11. If we jump over there, just real quick, Genesis 31, 10 through 11, it doesn't say this right now, but when he's talking to his wives, Jacob says, chapter 31, verse 10, he's talking to his wives. They're going to make their run. They're going to make their break. They're going to escape. It says, in breeding season, I once had a dream. Now, I think this dream, and so do commentators, he refers to it later, but this dream had to take place before. That's one way of looking at it. You can think about however you want to. It doesn't say for sure. But in breeding season, I once had a dream in which I looked up and saw that the male goats mating with the flock were streaked, speckled, and spotted. The angel of God, that's Yahweh, or that's the second member of the Trinity. That's not just an angel. That's the one who spoke to him at Bethel. The angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob, I answered, here I am. And he said, look up and see that all the male goats mating with the flock are streaked, speckled, or spotted. For I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. So in other words, at the end of 14 years, listen, I'm going to give you some insight. Look at that. You see all the males that are mating with the sheep, they're all speckled, spotted. There's a clue. All the offspring are going to be speckled or spotted. I am the God of Bethel, he says, where you anointed a pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now leave this land at once and go back to your native land. So that's when he would have said, okay, I need to go. And Laban says, well, what do you need? He says, I'll give you whatever you want. He says, well, I just had a dream last night that all the males mating were speckled, spotted, or striped. Tell you what, Laban, you don't have to pay me anything. I'll just go with that dream. I'll just take the spotted ones. And Laban's like, well, that's stupid. It's like, oh, okay. So, and I think the reason Jacob comes up with this concept is because God told him the dream. Because that's what he says to his wives. Okay, we go back to chapter 30, page 2 of the notes. He says, you shall not give me anything. If you will do this for me, I will again pasture your flock and keep it. Let me pass through all your flock today, removing from it every speckled, spotted sheep and every black lamb, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and they shall be my wages. So my honesty will answer for me. When you come to look into my wages, every one that is not speckled or spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found with me, shall be counted as stolen. So in other words, he says, I'll watch your flocks, but every time there is a spotted one or speckled one, starting today, I'm going to pull it out and make my own herd. Now, you can come out and inspect my herd anytime you want to, and if there's a white sheep here, I'm sorry, I stole that from you. Take that back and put it in your herd. Or if there's a black goat, no spots or speckled, I stole that over here. And Laban's thinking, well, you're sure. If you want to work like that, that's fine. Okay. So that's now. We go down Genesis chapter 30, verse 34 through 36. Laban said, good. Let it be as you have said. I'll agree with that contract. But that day, Laban, to beat Jacob to the punch, Laban says, okay, we'll do that. Here's my flock. Here's Jacob's flock, zero. I'll write the word zero. Here's Jacob's flock does not exist yet because he's going to get all the spotted black sheep and all the striped or colored white sheep. And Laban goes out and he very carefully looks through it all. And then here's Laban's sons. Laban's sons have flocks they're watching also some away from Jacob's working this part of the land. They're working that part of the land. He takes all the few that were in here and herds them over and puts them into his sons' herds, and so they're all gone. It says, okay, let's go. So these are all white sheep, all perfectly black goats, and we start the deal. So we've already named his price. Laban, again, changed it, as he always does. So that's in verse 34. Good, let it be as you have said. But that day Laban removed the male goats that were striped and spotted and all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had white on it, and every lamb that was black, and put them in the charge of his sons. And he set a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, and Jacob pastured the rest of Laban's flock. So there's three. Laban's over here with his sons and his flocks. There's 3 days of travel, pasturing, and so Jacob's over here with white and black goats. And they don't check on him every day. He just, this is the investment. So now whoever is from here, this point on, whatever is born with a spot or a speckle is going to start building Jacob's herd up. And so that's where we're at. Going to page 3. Then Jacob, now Jacob, they're 3 days away with their flock. Jacob's over here with his family, his wives, his sons are helping him. Then Jacob took fresh sticks of poplar. Now, I've got this written down here. There's two things that are going to be taking place right here. There is superstition, and there is going to be some science. Superstition. And this is all you can say about the visual aids that Jacob provides during the breeding season. He's going to provide visual aids to the sheep and the goats while they're breeding. And it's superstition. There's no evidence of this. And then there's going to be science, basic science of like, you know this, like produces like. So whatever the parents are like, that's what this is going to have genetic effect. So he's going to use some science, which they understand this. But no one knows about this practice that he's going to do here. And that's what I got written down. Superstition, the visual aids during breeding at the watering stations. There's no modern, even today, scientifically, why would that work? It wouldn't. Well, maybe they thought it would. Maybe in the newsy tablets there's some clue that this was working and this is what they believed. But there's nothing recorded anywhere in the ancient Near East or in the entire ancient world that what Jacob is going to do here was practice in Babylon or Ur or in Egypt or in, you know, North America. And this is like, there's no science, there's no rhyme or reason. But here he goes. Here's Jacob. Then Jacob took fresh sticks of poplar and almond and plane trees. So sticks from these trees, names of trees, and peeled white streaks in them. In other words, he shaves off the bark. So these three trees are white. They have white wood on the inside. And I've worked with some of those. And you peel the bark, you can see the white wood. So he's thinking, I'm not sure what he's thinking, and exposed white of the sticks. He set the sticks that he had peeled in front of the flocks in the troughs, so at the watering stations, that is, the watering places where the flocks come to drink. So when the flocks all come to drink and they get refreshed, where they're all like mingling together, they're not grazing, well, that's when the mating takes place. And since they bred when they came to drink, the flocks bred in front of the sticks, in front of the white sticks that had the white exposed with the bark shaved off. And so the flocks brought forth striped, speckled, and spotted sheep. It's like, there's nothing to say. That's not scientific. It's not a custom. It could have been a custom, but it's no recorded anywhere. We know we have a lot of tablets from this time, a lot of history, but. And then the lambs and goats are starting to be born, and Jacob separated the lambs and set the faces of the flocks towards the stripe and all the black in the flock of Laban. He put his own droves apart and did not put them with Laban's flock. So now he's building up his own flock because of that, the stripes, in this all white black herd, all of a sudden, there's numbers being born. I think the answer has to be God told him this is what's going to happen. God told him, you know what I see? I see, Jacob said he saw in this dream from the Lord, he saw the males were speckled and striped and spotted, and they were breeding. And so they're going to produce this. Now, in reality, it was just, they were all white. But God had says, what you see right here, it looks like genetic. You can't see what's taking place genetically. God was, in a sense, giving a heads up what's about to take place. If it's scientifically genetic taking place, if it was a miracle, whatever happens, it happens. And watch, a little punchline coming here. When Jacob flees, he puts his wife and his children on camels. Now, to the average Bible reader, you know, it's like, well, of course, everybody rode camels. Well, that's like saying everyone in West Des Moines drives a fancy, powerful car. It's like, well, there are some of those there, but not everyone's got one. Jacob, when they flee, they all fled on camels. All of his sons are on camels. His wives are all on camels. Everyone's riding off on their own camel. So in this 6 years, the first 14 years, he worked off time to pay for his wives. He's got a family at the end of 14 years, and he's depending upon Laban. In the next 6 years, he goes from basically being offered to work for wages, you know, $5 an hour, $10, what do you want? To his family rides off on camels. So he's not just going to get a herd. This herd is going to be sold. It's going to be invested in. It's going to produce. You know, they've got wool, so they're in the clothing industry. He's got milk. They're going into the dairy business. He's making money on all of these things so that within 6 years, his whole family flees on camels. Now that's a huge statement. Okay, and it's coming up. You don't see that yet. Okay, so that's verse 40. And Jacob separated the lambs and set the face of the flocks towards the striped and all the black in the flock of Laban. He put his own droves apart and did not put them with Laban's flock. Whenever the stronger of the flock, now here's the scientific thing he does, verse 41. Whenever the stronger of the flock were breeding, Jacob would lay sticks in the troughs before the eyes of the flock that they might breed among the sticks. But for the feebler of the flock, he would not lay them there. So the feebler would be Laban's and the strong would be Jacob's. Again, there's a little bit of science. He's taking the stronger and those white sticks that he's got, he puts those in front of where the strong are going to be drinking. And then the weak, he filters them all over there and they're all over there breeding with the weak over there. And they're just becoming white sheep, black goats with weak white goats or white sheep. They're just he's using some genetics. And over here, he's still using his concept of the white sticks, but now he's got the strong breeding with the strong. And so his flock is now, they're bigger, stronger, healthier, and the weak are coming down here. Now that's a little bit of science. Now again, you've got the white sticks involved in that, but he's separating the weak from the strong and he's making sure they're breeding that way. Now the weak don't have the sticks, the strong have the white sticks. Thus, the man increased greatly and had large flocks, female servants and male servants and camels and donkeys. So in this 6 years, this sounds like a 20-year process, but in 6 years, this process, he's got large herds, healthy, stronger, and he's got to hire people to help him. He's already got sons, but he's hiring female and male servants. What are they doing? Well, potentially some of them are weaving and making clothing out of the wool. Some of them are producing milk and dairy products with the milk that the flocks are producing. Some of them are being sold. Some of them are whatever. But he's female servants, male servants to run his. He's become a corporation. Genesis 31. The next chapter. Now, Jacob heard that the sons of Laban were saying, Jacob has taken all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has gained all this wealth. Now, they're over here. Now listen, Laban's sons have a flock over here. Now, I write this here, and you don't have to agree with it. I'm not an economist by any means. But I did read Dennis Prager's commentary, so it does make sense. Laban's sons are going to be complaining that Jacob has taken all the wealth. And as Prager was saying, the concept there is a false concept that there's this much. Now again, this is, you got to get into economy and this, you know, I'm a shop teacher, so. But there's this much wealth. There's only so much wealth. And if Jacob takes and has a percentage of the wealth or has large wealth, that means there's less wealth for the others to have. So there's only 100% of the wealth. Jacob takes 70% of the wealth. That leaves Laban with only 30% of the wealth. And at the start of this, Laban had, you know, 90 or 100% of the wealth. So these guys are getting ripped off. Jacob has taken all the wealth over here. But first of all, there's a 3-day distance between them. And so Jacob has taken this flock and has produced this flock. This is Laban's. He's produced this flock, and from this flock, he's produced tremendous wealth. If it, you know, like I said, selling the wool, selling the dairy products, producing. So he just takes an investment and increases. In other words, they could both be increasing at the same rate. Jacob could have a wealth in large flocks. Laban's sons could have wealth in large flocks. But instead, they haven't been doing what Jacob has been doing. And so they complain about Jacob's wealth. And because Jacob's got wealth, that means their wealth has been taken. And you can hear this in society. Because these people are wealthy, that's why these people are poor. Well, you know, these people have opportunities. These people have opportunities. And there are people that have disadvantages. But in our story tonight, Laban's sons do not have any. They are the favored sons. They're the ones that have all the advantage. Jacob is the foreigner in a foreign land that just spent 14 years working for a family that's only going to become a more of a burden for him. But now he gets a chance to invest, and now he's got camels, men servants, maid servants, donkeys. And Laban's sons are like, whoa, where'd all of our money go? He produced it. It didn't go anywhere. Okay, so that's what is being said here. So here is chapter 31. Now Jacob heard that the sons of Laban were saying, Jacob has taken all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has gained all his wealth. That wealth is supposed to be our wealth. And Jacob saw that Laban did not regard him with favor as before. Now, I'm not sure when. You got to read, that's a Bible verse. But I'm not sure when did Jacob ever see Laban had favor on him. He used him and took advantage of him. But if anything, that means he realizes he's in trouble. He tried to leave 6 years before. Laban convinced him to stay. Now after 6 years, and this is an important point right here, Jacob realizes things have turned sour. I could negotiate here. They're going to take it and make it their advantage. But during this 6 years, things have deteriorated. I have to leave. Now, when did God tell him to leave? He told him to leave here. He said, I need to go back. God gave him the dream, make this kind of a deal. Now he's prospering. Now he's got tremendous wealth now after 6 more years. And now he realizes, if I stay, I don't know if you've ever been in that kind of a position where, you know, I want to stay, but things are so negative here that wisdom would say, I need to leave. God says, leave here. Jacob negotiates, prospers. God allows him to stay, probably gave him advice. We know he gave him advice. But now right here, Jacob realizes in this verse, Jacob heard the sons of Laban were saying this, and that Laban had lost favor, or he lost favor in Laban's eyes. Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you. So now circumstances are lined up against him. There's no chance he's going to get out. They're going to end up justifying stealing this all from him. Do you think Laban would steal it from him? Do you think Laban would cheat him? Yes. He already took the lambs that he thought were going to be productive for Jacob. He already gave him the wrong wife. Jacob's going to say, Laban, your father has changed my wages 10 times. I've had 10 different contracts with your father, and every time he changed it to his own advantage. So Jacob right here knows he's in trouble. God says, leave, go back, I'll be with you. And so I got that's all written down right there, the deteriorating relationships. Turn the page, please, page 4. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah. Now they're with the tents, they're with the children, but now out here as he's watching his flock, they're going to go out into the field and meet with Jacob. And now these are his wives. They are secure in their marriage because they produce children. He has paid the price. They are his. And he's going to present to them the case. He's got to get them on his side. Now, it mentions Rachel and Leah here. It doesn't mention Bilhah and Zilpah because they're not wives. And they're not daughters of Laban. They're slave girls. And so he's going to be making a break from Laban. And so they've got to be heads up. It's like, okay, I'm making a move here, and this is why I'm doing this. And so there could be a tendency for them to side with their father instead of Jacob. And he's trying to make sure everything's clear and they understand. So here's what Jacob thinks. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah into the field where his flock was. And again, so they're out of the way. Laban can't see what's going on, plus they're 3 days away. And said of them, I see that your father does not regard me with favor as he did before. So whatever's went on that first 14 years, Jacob says it's worse now than it was when he lied to me about our marriage. But, he says, the God of my father has been with me for these 20 years. You know that I have served your father with all my strength. And so once again, he's getting them. He says, God's with me. And he says, I have worked for your father. I've done the 14 years of work, and now the 6 years that I've been with him during raising, taking care of these flocks, I've been working. I've been faithful. He's got his flock. I've got my flock. So I've been faithful to your father. I've done what I said I was going to do. It's not like I skipped work. You know that I have served your father with all my strength. Yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. Some commentators think that's an overstatement. But I think in 20 years, especially when you start off with the marriage contracts and agreements and he starts changing those agreements and we see him make an agreement, whatever your wages are, and then as soon as he makes the agreement, he pulls the sheep out. I mean, we've got three or four examples that we can see ourselves. And to think that Laban hasn't done it 10 times in 20 years, I don't think it's unreasonable that Laban has changed Jacob's wages 10 times and Jacob has kept track of it. It's like he's ripping me off. But God did not permit him to harm me. If he said, and here's an example of that, we don't have a record of this until now. If Laban said, the spotted shall be your wages, then all the flock bore spotted. And if he said, okay, no, not the spotted, it's going to be the striped are going to be yours. Well, originally all the spotted and all the striped were his. But Laban said, well, you can't have the striped, you can only have the spotted. So that was something that changed apparently during the 6 years. Well, then all of a sudden, I got a bunch of spots like, well, okay, wait. I'm going to keep the spotted. You can have the striped. Again, remember, originally, Jacob got them both. You just got the white and the black. I got anything that was a rarity. And it was very rare, except now it's happening constantly. As soon as he changed the wages, they started producing, then all the flock bore striped. Thus God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. Through this negotiation process, it was all legal. It was all agreed upon. In fact, Laban was making the rules. But every time Laban changed the rules, God flipped it and made it bless me. So he's giving God credit. And you can see God promising that to Jacob. Now, verse 10. In the breeding season, and here's we've read this already, of the flock. Where did I get this idea? This is possibly in verse 10. This is where, he says, where did I get this idea? You've never heard of it before. Well, in the breeding season of the flock, I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream that the goats that mated with the flock were striped, spotted, or molted. Then the angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob, and I said, here I am. And he said, lift up your eyes and see. All the goats that mate with the flock are striped, spotted, and molted. For I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel. Now, I'm going to insert this here, and I've never seen this before, and I maybe shouldn't. But did God tell him, if you will then put a white stick in front of it, I'll make sure? Was that an act of faith in response to some kind of, was that part of the vision? There's no reason to believe that, except that would make sense that he's, as an act of faith, you're putting these, he's being obedient to something God told him to do. You don't have to accept that, but that would explain why he was doing that and why God's honoring Jacob's putting these white sticks in front and it's working out for him. And then he changes it and it works out for him. For I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel. And that's where Jacob went to sleep and the Lord came down the stairway and talked to him. Where you anointed a pillar, that's where he stood his pillow up or the rock that he slept on and poured oil on it. And made a vow to me that I would be your God if I took care of you. Now arise and go out from this land and return to the land of your kindred. You've come, you've done your job, you've done what I told you to, I've taken care of you, now it's time to go back to the land of your kindred. Now, He said that to his wives. This is, he's explained to his wives so they will follow. Then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, now this is their opinion, is there any portion of our any portion or inheritance left to us in our father's house? That bride price that Jacob was to pay for them, any of the money that was coming from the bride price, that was to be, one, that was for the bride, and that would serve, you know, it would go to the father, but Laban should have held on to that money. It was, in a sense, security for the bride. Oftentimes, especially in the Nuzi tablets, it would become their dowry, the bride's dowry, eventually, you know, at some point. Or if everything falls apart, it was an early form of, or an ancient form of, life insurance. Meaning if your husband dies, everything goes south, Laban's got this money that he's made off of Jacob that's been set aside, and that would be potentially, the father would keep that. But in this case, they realize we have nothing. Is there any portion or inheritance left to us in our father's house? Are we not regarded by him as foreigners? I mean, we're not even members of his family. For he has sold us. They consider this bride price. He got 14 years of labor for the two girls, and Laban took all that earnings and spent it. It's like what they're saying, he's taken our life insurance policy and cashed it in and spent it on himself. So we have no life insurance, we have no dowry, we have no inheritance, we have zero. He's treating us like we're foreigners, like we're not even part of his family. So, meaning, Jacob's saying, your father hasn't treated me right, yet God has blessed me. What do you think? Well, look at us. Do you think we got treated right? We got sold for nothing, and our whatever you produced, our father burned it up, and we're stuck with you. You're all we've got. Jacob is the only inheritance these girls have. And it's not a bad deal because the Lord has blessed them. But they're admitting it right now. Verse 16, all the wealth that God has taken away from our father belongs to us and to our children. Meaning it was our father's, and he spent it, and everything he spent, it's been now transferred over to you, and that's, you have the money. Our children's inheritance is with you. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. In other words, right there they're saying, we're with you. We're going to go wherever you go. So Jacob arose and set his sons, and I've got it underlined, set his sons and wives on camels. Again, that's a huge statement. Remember when, what's his name? Abimelech? No, Abraham's servant that came and got Isaac's wife, got Rebecca. I forgot his name. Eliezer. What? Eliezer? Okay, thank you. When he came on a camel, and he had all the gold and all the jewelry. When Jacob came, he came with nothing. Where now he's not leaving on a camel alone, his wives are on camels, his sons are on camels. Now, are there two or three people riding on a camel? I don't know, but it would appear they've each got their own camel. We're going to find out Rachel's sitting on her own camel in the next week. And he put his sons and his wives on camels. He drove away all his livestock. So he takes all of his herds and drives them forward. His sons are probably helping him. And he's just like Abraham had men servants and maid servants. Jacob probably has men servants and maid servants with him now too, along with the camels. And all his property. Well, again, in the Bible Sunday school story, you know, he just lives in a tent, you know. It's like, well, no, they've got property. They've got possessions. They've got all kinds of things that he had gained. The livestock in his possession that he had acquired in Paddan Aram to go to the land of Canaan to his father Isaac. So very importantly, he's going to Canaan, going to his father Isaac. He's leaving Rebecca's brother, but Rachel and Leah's father, and going to his father in his own country. Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and now, so over here where the Laban's at, he had gone out there with his sons to shear the sheep. It's usually April or May of the year, so you kind of get an idea of what time of year it is, if that makes any sense to us here in Iowa. And they're shearing the sheep. It's a lot of manpower, a lot of work, includes a lot of celebration. So Laban's completely engaged in this activity. And so now's the perfect time to flee. Because Jacob's got to get his family, his flocks, his possession, pull up all their stuff and start moving quickly while this shearing season is going on. So Jacob is stealing away, and I don't know if you can blame him, because Laban has cheated him. He's already found out that he's in an unfavorable position. He's going to get hurt if he stays, and God has told him to go. So God has told him to go. Laban's treated him unfairly, and the worst is yet to come. So Jacob's really got, naturally, get out of here. Spiritually, follow God. So he's doing the right thing. And it's not like he should have stopped and said, you know, well, he should have said goodbye. It's like, I did 6 years ago, and then you began to rip me off again. So I'm just leaving. But Laban had gone to shear the sheep, and Rachel, because her father's stuff is all unprotected, stole her father's household gods. And Jacob tricked Laban, the Aramean, by not telling him that he intended to flee. So Rachel steals the gods. Jacob flees. He fled with all that he had and arose and crossed the Euphrates. And you can see where Haran is at right there. There's a crosses the Euphrates there and continues down, going through Damascus. And we'll pick up, that's like a 400-mile journey. I've got it written down somewhere. Now that word, the household gods, is the word teraphim. This is the last thing. How much time we got, Tony? Teraphim. That's household gods. It's translated throughout your Bible in a variety of situations. Here it's household gods. And when you think of a household god, you think of an idol. Like they're bowing down in work. They get up every morning and they pray to the different gods, the teraphim. Okay, that's possible. The teraphim, they're going to be called, well, for example, when Saul comes to kill David, Saul's daughter helps David escape, and then she takes a teraphim and lays it in the bed, puts some goat hair on it, and covers it up with a sheet, and when they come in, they think it's David. And so it's big enough where it could be, you know, the size of a torso at least. But next week, we're going to see Rachel is got them in her saddlebag and is sitting on them. And Laban's going to go through all the possessions, but he doesn't go through Rachel's saddlebag. So they're small enough to put in a saddlebag. Now, they could be made out of, we'll just say, silver or gold, so they could be valuable. But what we know, what appears to be, and I've got right here, on the back page, I've got pictures from several museums, the British Museum, the Oriental Institute Museum, a couple other ones there. Those are images. Now, some of those, you can have images of gods that you would pray to, that you'd like, that you'd hang on to, you carry with you like a good luck charm. Egypt would make little images to put in tombs, and they were supposed to come alive and serve the deceased in the afterlife. Some of these could be worshipers. Like, you'd go to the temple of the god, and since you can't be there, you'd bring an image of yourself. And like those images, some of them would have, like, you know, they'd be painted. Some of them might have, you know, some kind of hair actually put in the head that's deteriorated. Some of it's carved on. But you'd put the image of yourself in front of the god, so that when the guy would look, he'd go, oh, there's Galen, he's still worshiping me, or it'd indicate you're still in prayer. Meanwhile, you're off doing your work or whatever. Or the teraphim would also be, well, here it is. Point two, the bottom of page five. The household gods or teraphim, they were, at this teraphim right here that we're talking about, they were images of the deceased ancestors. And they were used for these things. I've got a war room at home in the basement. I call it the war room. I've got my grandfather's World War I pictured in the oval case that was from, you know, 1918. I've got his brother-in-law's, Henry Sonius, is right there, that he died the last days of World War I in France. He's buried over there, but I've got his picture there. I've got my great-great-grandfather's picture from the Civil War in his Union. Thank God it wasn't the Confederate. But you get back there that far, you got people fighting on both sides, so it's like, but I've got his picture. I've got some other pictures from my great-grandmother and great-grandfather on the other side of the family. So anyway, I've got these, it's warm. And I like that, I think it's cool. I show my kids this and Tyler looks at them. Anyway, to remember, I like to remember a little bit of family history. I don't worship them, I don't pray for them. They don't mean anything except to me. I think you could sell the frames. I think you could sell the World War I frames because they've got the oval glass. I could go on Amazon and sell that. Okay, but nonetheless, that would be like my deceased relatives. I'm hanging on to that, so I've got some connection to them. This would be the same thing. They would have the images of, not the same thing. No, not the same thing. But it would be, it's like that. By making these images, they would be taking care of the dead. They would eventually use them for divination. In other words, you could use these because that deceased person is now in the spiritual realm. They could ask them questions or, you know, ask for signs. Several, point C, several of the Nuzi texts, those are the cuneiform tablets from this time period, say the primary heir received the teraphim. So whoever receives, like Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, whoever is the primary recipient of the family's estate would receive these teraphim because they were like they were like the title deed to the property, to the family possessions. One Nuzi text states that the teraphim were not to go to a man outside the family. They'd go to, say, the oldest son. And the oldest son would continue to pass them down, and you'd continue to build up this collection of your ancestors so you could remember them. It'd be a way of honoring the dead. Eventually they'd get into, you know, they were not gods. They just were the deceased people that, of course, had gone on, and you could use them for, you know, divination or something. The teraphim connected the family unit to the property and the heart of the family. Rachel's interest in the teraphim. Why does she take the teraphim? Now remember, Leah and Rachel think they've been ripped off. By taking these teraphim, I think you're making a mistake to say that she's going to worship these gods. I don't think these are gods. I don't think these are, you know, the polytheistic, and they're going to worship this god and this god. I think these are representations of the ancestors that maybe you could use them for divination purpose and try and get answers from the spiritual realm. But this represented who owned the estate, who had the title deed. And she's taken them, so Laban can't give them to his sons. She's taken them, in a sense, she's going to take them and making Jacob the head of the family. It makes no difference, really. But in Rachel's mind, she's taken the family headship from Laban and giving it to Jacob, and she's going with him. Rachel's interest in the teraphim has to do with inheritance and family headship, but not worship or idolatry. Now, later on, this is going to be forbidden. Eventually, you can see how you're going to have the ancestors, they're going to have access to the spiritual dimension and use them for divination. Eventually, they could become idols and gods, and you actually worship them and burn incense to them. And that's going to be forbidden in the law of Moses. But this right here, I don't think it's that far. I think it's that this is a claim. She's taken the title to the house. She's taken the deeds. She's taken the paperwork. She's getting her life insurance back. And so that's what is written right there. And that's on the next page. There's just some pictures of them. And I think some of those are images that came out of temples, but some of those are images. And you can see some of them are big, like David had one that was put and covered up in bed so it looked like a human. Some of them are small enough that Rachel could carry them. There's just a sample of those. So we will pick this up next week. They're on the run. You can see that map that they're running to. And Laban's going to find out the gods are gone, the teraphim are gone, and he's frantic because I don't think it's a religious issue. It's like, who do I pray to now? You've stolen my God. I think it's more of a material possession, title deed, than it is, I need to pray to my God. I'll pray and we're done. We'll pick this up next week. Father, we do thank you for your word. We thank you for the history that's recorded here. We thank you for working in Jacob's life and know that you're still alive and working in our lives in the same way, leading and guiding us. We ask that we would be sensitive to your direction, that we would, by your Spirit, be able to understand how you're leading and guiding us and doing the things you've called us to. But we especially thank you for your word and the Spirit that lives within us, that we can be children of God at this time in history. We do thank you for this and ask for your continuous guidance and protection on our country. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time.